ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 28 टेक्स्ट 46 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड पुरांजान बिकम द वुमन इन द नेक्स्ट लाइफ। यदा उपलभ्यता अंग्रौ उष्मानं पत्यु अर्चति आसित संविग्ना हृदया युथाभृष्टा मृगी यथा। यदा नोपलभेतांग्रौ उष्मानं प्रत्युरर्चति आसित संविग्ना हृदया युथाभृष्टा मृगी यथा। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. While she was serving her husband by massaging his legs, she could feel that his feet were no longer warm and could thus understand that he had already passed from the body. She felt great anxiety upon being left alone, bereft of her husband's company. She felt exactly as the deer feels upon being separated from its mate. Purport. As soon as the circulation of blood and air within the body stops, it is to be understood that the soul within the body has left. The stoppage of the blood's circulation is perceived when the hands and feet lose heat. One tests whether a body is alive or not by feeling the heart's palpitations and the coldness of the feet and hands. While she was serving her husband by massaging his legs, she could feel that his feet were no longer warm and could thus understand that he had already passed from the body. She felt great anxiety upon being left alone. Bereft of her husband's company, she felt exactly as the deer feels upon being separated from its mate. The devout wife, who was King Puranjan in her previous life, is seen in this particular chapter to be, in this section, to playing the role of an ideal partner to the husband in Krishna consciousness. She is performing her most sacred duty of serving her husband in her pursuit, in his pursuit of the goal of life, which is to become Krishna conscious. In this particular sloka today we are reading that as she is continuing her devoted service, the husband life affairs come to a stop, and soon she perceives that the feet and the hands have become cold. And she realizes that this is a sure sign that the embodied soul has left. Prabhupada explains as to why the feet become cold. All of us, when we touch our bodies, we know we have a temperature, we have a element of heat in our body. Agni element is there, earth, water, fire, air and ether. The fire element is maintained by incomprehensible regulation of this body at exactly 98.6 degrees. Whether you run and generate heat or set in an air conditioner environment, whatever happens, but the body temperature is beautifully maintained beyond the realm of human understanding at exactly the same point. However, this only happens till the soul is there. But the soul is the source of life. And along with the soul comes all the airs, the pranavayu. Subtle elements also are there with the soul. The soul is like as if floating in the midst of all these airs surrounding it. Bouncing in between all these airs which are covering. Samana, Vayana, Udana, Prana Shakti, all these five airs are, and the soul is there in between. So actually, when the soul passes away, the soul is in the heart. So the first thing it stops is the heart, because the primary reason why there is heat in the body is because the blood is reaching all the cells. The blood is circulating through all the arteries, capillaries, small vessels, and is reaching to every cell of the body. It's carrying all the vital nutrients. Air is a source. The blood is the source of all energetic raw material, which each and every cell harnesses from the blood, takes what it needs. And from all those raw materials, especially glucose, it actually metabolizes, breaks down glucose into energy molecules. The energy molecules store heat. There are molecules in the body. It's a beautiful system. Anybody who reads the system or trying to understand it can see how the most inconceivable, Krishna is inconceivable, he has got Achintya Shakti. As he is inconceivable to the material mind, therefore it's called Adhokshaja, beyond the realm of understanding of the senses. Similarly, whatever he creates in this world also, nothing is comprehensible by the human mind. Nothing at all. There cannot be anything which the human being in the topmost sense can say that we have understood this physical phenomena completely. There is not. Many of us are science students and have graduated from engineering background, medical background, but can we know of any phenomena in nature, whether it's formation of rocks, or the movement of air, creation of cyclones, or anything which you can think of, where exactly know why something happens, how it really happens? These questions are not answered. There is nothing comprehensible. It's a very inconceivable system. And we look at the human body, of course, it's just a bag of bewilderment. It's a complete bewildering thing. Only false ego dictates that we claim to know, but we don't know. We don't know anything practically. How there are small molecules. One molecule is called ATP in the body, which is actually what stores the heat element. Heat element is at the molecular level is stored by ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And then it is that which breaks down by enzyme. Beautiful. Anytime you need energy, how the body understands that we have to run now, or we have to do activity, or sing now, we have to do some activity. There is some, who tells the body that now come on, break down this molecule? How cells have intelligence? This is so wonderful. When you need energy all the time, of course. While you are sleeping, you need energy to maintain your basic metabolic rate, the BMR. Just resting. But even then you do activity, how does the body actually know that you have to generate somewhat more energy now when you're dancing? The enzymes are working on this molecule ATP and breaking it down to ADP, from triphosphate to diphosphate. So that when only that one phosphate element is removed, it generates heat. It generates a quantum heat. It's a quantum mechanics, you have quantum rays of light, quantum energy. So this is also quantum energy at the molecular level in the body. and generates heat. And when so many ATP molecules are broken down, that keeps the heat element on at 98. Fantastic. And this is just a very simplistic layman's understanding of what is, how it's really happening. There is a entirely volumes of thousands of books written to understand how this is really happening. The electron exchange chain, and it's a whole big thing. Anyway, this point is that the soul leaves. When the soul leaves, the heart stops. The heart stops, there is no pumping. There is no pumping, the blood is not flowing. Because no blood is flowing to the cells, whatever existing ATP is there is broken down into ADP, and then no more ATP is being generated. Because when you expend energy, you have to create more energy also to keep the stock. But no ATP is being generated, and then gradually the body starts cooling down. And it comes to room temperature. Whatever the room temperature is there, just like any matter, you take any water body or whatever is there in around us, all is at a room temperature, along what is there in the environment. So body also becomes part of, is only matter now, there is no spirit there. So like any other matter, it just reaches the point of equilibrium with the surrounding, becomes cold. So doctors also, when they go there to the bedside of a patient, they first touch the feet many times. And find it becoming cold, either body is already dead or it's on the path of going to die. When Srila Prabhupada also was there in his last stage, the Kaviraj would do the same thing. Kaviraj was always there next to his bedside and he was testing. And also Prabhupada says that about the breathing stops, the air stops. So the flow is not there, even the lungs stop moving, and therefore the air, you don't breathe. This was tested by, you remember the story of Sarvam Bhattacharya, scientific. Whether the air is coming out or not, because any movement means there is life. If anything is moving, then there, you know, the air is moving, blood is moving, heart is beating. If there is movement, then that means there is life. But he put that cotton swab, thinnest cotton swab, at the nose of his. He had no pulse. Remember, Mahaprabhu had no pulse. There was no blood flowing. There was no pulse. There was no heartbeat. Heart had stopped practically. So in one sense, there are, in a stage of deep ecstasy, inconceivable things can happen, which is beyond medical science again. How is it that you don't have a pulse and you're still alive? These doctors cannot explain. This is a yogic trance. Yogis can do this. A deep yogic trance, but modern science doesn't know how. So you put a thin cotton swab at the nose of Mahaprabhu Chaitanya, and there's a slight flicker. Even though no pulse, no heart, no blood pressure, fine, but still, swab is moving a little bit. There is some life air still there in his lungs, which is coming in and out. He will come alive. He will come back. So then they did whatever. Harinam, that was the tonic, that was the elixir, that was the intravenous fluid for Mahaprabhu's body. They didn't start pumping his chest and beating them and putting all electric, you know, shocks to his heart. That is a mundane way of looking at things. But Mahaprabhu's body is transcendental. He doesn't respond to electric current shocks. He responds to only the holy name. So, right throughout his life, Mahaprabhu would always respond to the holy name. Even when he's crying, he had to stop, respond to only the holy name. In his deep ecstasy also, all the only thing which would bring him alive, that external consciousness was the holy name. He was always, Mahaprabhu was always responsive. Always responsive when there was Harinam going on. Always very responsive. So when Harinam was brought loudly in his ears, then he came alive to external consciousness. So this is the part which Prabhupada is explaining here about heart stopping and feet becoming cold and air breathing stopping. Prabhupada has compared this, the wife here to the disciple and the husband to the spiritual master. Of course, even in actual life, the husband is often called as Guru Pati. So he plays the role of a representative of Guru in a woman's life. But for all of us, man or woman, we should have a Guru. So here, and the further slokas, Prabhupada is bringing us from something which is very, very solemn. Very solemn subject of great gravity is being discussed here about the disappearance of the spiritual master. And how wonderful is it that Srila Prabhupada, Krishna's Vani in the form of scripture is complete, Krishna's representative, the spiritual master, is also complete. What does that really mean? He is complete. That he teaches completely everything to his disciple also. The Guru is complete with all knowledge, with all realized knowledge, and he gives his complete unrestricted mercy to his disciples, not withholding anything. And in that overflow of unlimited compassion of a complete nature, he teaches disciples everything. The disciple is never left in any element of ignorance. Therefore we always say, Om Agyanati Marandasya. There is no question of ignorance in a devotee's life whatsoever. A devotee is completely informed, is completely illuminated, is completely supplied with all that he needs to know in this life, in the next life, till he goes back to Godhead. Every type of information about the phenomenal world, the spiritual world, the heavenly worlds, the nether worlds, about life, about death, everything. How to respond, into the question of saying, how to even respond psychically, psychologically, when the Guru leaves. Even that is explained by the spiritual master. How to worship the spiritual master, that also Guru explains. This is how you should worship me. So, what kind of a exalted service is being rendered by the spiritual master? What is the depth of his service? He teaches a disciple everything. In fact, the disciple can conveniently forget all that he has learned in his life through school and college. If he only understands the verdict of his Guru, then he knows everything. Because it is said, Yasna Vignatam Sarvam, what is that sloka is there? If you know Krishna, then you know everything. Prabhupada was not intellectual, scientific giant with some PhD degrees, but he says very conveniently, we see him, you know, hearing these cassettes with scientists, with philosophers, he is able to answer any question. There is not one question, there are the whole, all these books are filled with Prabhupada's dialogues, there's a whole book of conversations, all about what Prabhupada is talking, question and answers. We have not encountered even one time the Prabhupada flustered. He was always knew what is right. He knew always the best answer. He may give different answers depending upon the situation to the same question, depending upon the mood and the atmosphere and the audience like that. But he always knew everything. So when he knows Krishna, knows everything. So also one who hears the Guru knows everything. Because hearing from a person who knows everything, so if you want to know everything also, you want to dispel all ignorance of your heart, then all you have to do is simply hear from one who knows everything. Prabhupada is explaining here in the subsequent slokas that when the Guru leaves, the disciples should cry. It's very intriguing type of sentence. Next this thing. You should cry. It is natural to cry, but then it is still being told that he should cry. And it's also being told how he should cry. Imagine. So how should cry? So just like how the wife is crying when the husband goes away, he should cry. Like a queen cries when the king goes away. So then Prabhupada is delving very deeply in this subsequent purports about the whole phenomena of responding to the departure of the Guru, how the disciples should respond. And this particular section was so useful in ISKCON, at a point of time in history when Prabhupada actually left this world. Were it not for Prabhupada to tell us all these things, the neophyte disciples like ourselves and our predecessors who are Prabhupada's disciples, who are from foreign backgrounds, didn't know anything of anything practically, they were practically zero, they would not know how to respond when the world Acharya left. We have heard from Radhana Swami Maharaj, his godbrothers and many Prabhupada's disciples, what was their reaction when Prabhupada left? One who means to you everything, one who is your life and soul, when that person leaves, what are you left with? We conveniently use the word life and soul, Prananath, Praneshwar, like that. But what does it really mean? This is what this means. When the soul leaves, what is left of the body? Is anything left of the body when the soul leaves? Nothing is left. It's just a bag of bones, flesh, to be thrown away to the funeral pyre or to the hungry birds. It is useless. It is just useless. Similarly, when you say that the life and soul of the disciple is the guru, when the guru leaves, what is left? His soul has left. His life is useless. There is no meaning to his life. All the disciples of Prabhupada felt like that. Especially those who are actually intimately connected to him. Krishna said in the Gita, Yoginam api sarvesham, that those who are most intimately connected with me in yoga. So also those who are intimately linked with Prabhupada through devotional service, they had this experience of complete shunyaitam jagat sarvam. There was complete vacuum. There was only zero in their life. Prabhupada virahiname. In Prabhupada's viraha, there was no meaning to their life. And these purports, which we will read now, and there are other purports also, which actually gave direction, is how we should feel, how we should think, and how we should act now. If were it not for these purports, especially about the section regarding Vapu and Vani, the Vani Seva, the movement had probably collapsed. If the disciples were not informed properly, because when such a thing happened, they all went to Srila Prabhupada's books. In fact, there was a whole book written by Sasurabh Goswami talking about this entire subject. This book is there. He lives forever. It is books like these, based on lectures given at that time, which saves the disciple's life. Because the disciple, the prominent disciples spoke from these purports, and that gave some reason for the disciples to live, just to continue their life. And after several months and few years, then they regained their spiritual energy to actually stand up based on the instructions which they received, to again continue forward and start seeing Prabhupada, who was not there anymore physically, but to see him still as a part of their life intimately in his words. This is the way the spiritual master lives in this world. He lives in two ways. He lives in his physical form, which is also spiritual, and his vani, which is also spiritual. The physical body is not material. Even though it is made up of matter, it is not material. It is spiritual. So, it is instructed that just like we have to prepare for our own departure, you hear often this slogan being said, life is a preparation, death is examination. We hear this often. That means every disciple, every devoted person actually prepares. In fact, some I have heard people say that every sincere devotee should ask himself this question every day, at least once. Am I ready? Am I ready to go? Because death comes at any time. So, since death is coming any time, that means we have to be ready at any time to leave. Similarly, a disciple does not even, he just prepares for his departure, but he also knows that there will be a time when his guru will leave. Some of the disciples, of course, will leave before the guru leaves, and some will live after. But nonetheless, there will be a point like that. So, the way a disciple will respond after when this phenomena takes place will depend upon how he has cultivated that relationship when the Guru is alive. Other than it will just be emotional outburst like when anyone else leaves the body. That is going to be there. However, the performance of the disciple after the Guru leaves will solely depend upon how he has cultivated that beautiful relationship when the Guru actually is there physically in this world. Therefore, it behoves as most important aspect of spiritual life as to cultivate the intimate relationship with the Guru when he is alive. It is a very powerful need of every disciple that he must strive, again with the life and soul, to strike a deep bond of relationship with the spiritual master. But that is also not physically based on proximity. Everything about the relationship between Guru and disciple is transcendentally spiritual. However, when the Guru is giving his physical presence darshan, then disciples must actually run to hear him. In a beautiful book by Indrumana Swami Maharaj, I think it's called Preaching Diary or something like that, and he writes about his travels in preaching. It's very interesting to see how devotees respond to their spiritual master and how much eager they show to have his association. He writes that he often has to travel. Russia is a big, huge country. Huge country is very far distances. And it is cold most of the time there. Temperatures reach to -52 degrees. When you get 5 degrees in Bombay, which is very rare, it's very cold, it's chilly, it's icy. Can you imagine living in a temperature which is -52 degrees and you have to go out and preach? But that is your duty. The spiritual master is not obstructed by any physical environment from his performing his duty of preaching to the devotees. So he travels 3 days for a program where he knows there will be about 200 to 300 people. 3 days of traveling in -50 degrees temperature for meeting 200 to 300 devotees. And from other part of the continent, devotees are traveling for 1200 miles for a 2-hour program, 3-hour program. 1200 miles. And imagine, this should remind us of the fact that these are people who have got practically no money. Russians have no money. They are a band of probably the most poorest devotees in the Hare Krishna movement. Living below poverty line. No money for means basic survival. But they still have to meet their Guru. They will travel 1200 miles in bitter zero temperatures to have his darshan. The Guru is eager to give his association, and the disciples are eager to have his association. This is beautiful. This is the ideal combination. And it is when that sangam takes place that beautiful things in Krishna consciousness emerge. And he speaks to them with love. Having travelled 3 days, having programs, Nir Maharaj returns back to his base. You can imagine travelling 3 days. When you're travelling the trains there, you're not enjoying even the beauty outside because everything is just pure white. The whole sky, the whole land, everything you see outside the window, which is also very blurred because there are blizzards flowing into your windows, all that you see outside is just a sheet of white everywhere. It's absolutely depressing because the human eye is trained for seeing variety of plants, human beings, bulls, huts. When you see that, there is life outside. When you see only deathly white snow for 3 days, it's depressing. Psychologically, you become morose and you're tired. 3 days of traveling is tiring. And the train stops at various points because there is snow accumulated. It takes 5 hours to remove the snow and just halted there for 5 hours. And what they do is, in the 5 hours, is there a temple near in this city? Yes, there is. Okay, it's going to take 5 hours to clear the snow. Let's go to the temple and, you know, give a lecture over there. So when the train has halted, they go to the program, give a lecture there and come back. And they're still digging the snow. Huh? And sit there and then you go. Keep on traveling. And Indrajit Maharaj reaches a particular his base again at 11:30 in the night after 3 days, 72 hours of traveling. And you can imagine the ATP levels in his body. There's no energy left at all. He's practically dead. And he's not a young man of 20. He's in his late 50s. Exhausted. And the disciple, and the bell rings, twing, and door opens. And here comes a young girl, crying, sobbing, begging, "Gurudev, my mother is your disciple. She is dying of cancer. You must come and give her an association." Here he is just waiting to crash into bed. After 6 days of traveling back and forth in bitter cold, with no proper food, no proper rest, nothing else, duty of this guru strikes his heart. He gets up and says, "I must do this. My disciple is dying." It is not the next door building which you have to go to. Traveling for 1.5 hours again in that bitter cold in the middle of the night at 12:30. You go there and you meet this. She's within her last days, last moments. You don't just sit there doing nothing. You do kirtan for her. And that then is not going to be just a melodious kirtan of Hari Bol. It's an intense kirtan to a dying soul. So all the energy of your heart has to be poured into the kirtan. Because that kirtan is the last kirtan probably that disciple will ever hear in his life. So what energy, what emotions have to be poured in that kirtan? It's intense experience. But then somehow she survives beyond. It appears that she will probably live for a few more moments and he has to come back. Again 1.5 hour of traveling. It's 5:30 in the morning. And there is nothing left in his body. He just crashes down. But he cannot crash for 8-10 hours to recover. Within 3 hours he has to get up for his japa at 8:30. Because he has to attend a marriage at 11:30 of disciples. 15 disciples being married together. Russia cannot afford to have one marriage where, you know, 1,000 rupees are spent. Samuhik Shadi, congregational marriage, the congregational kirtan. Because they cannot afford one ceremony, one yagya, and everyone comes and the swaha swaha, and then 15 disciples are married. But a guru has to go to bless them. So again he travels. This is the compassion of the spiritual master. No, sorry, I forgot one thing. When he came at 11:30 in the night to his base, he wanted to just crash into bed, and there were 50 disciples waiting for him there to have his association. Because Gurudev is coming after a long time. So then he has to, and he understands that there is a need of me to give myself to these waiting devotees. So he speaks to them. Then this bell rings and he goes and travels and he comes back. So this gives us a glimpse of what actually the guru goes through in his life. Extending himself way beyond all physical measures of even rational thinking, only with the propelling force of compassion. When the guru does, we say that actually the disciple must serve his guru, but oftentimes you find just the other way things happening. The guru is constantly serving his disciples. And the separation, the service of the guru, what service is a disciple able to offer to his guru? Glass of water, some khichdi to prepare for him, some medicines to give with water, some fruit juice. That's all. What is a disciple's service to his guru? A small preaching program. He just goes and everything is arranged, the audience is arranged, and the mic is arranged, books are arranged, flowers are arranged, prasad is arranged, goes and speaks and comes back. Preaching service. But how much does a guru do for his disciples? It's million times multiplied. And all the karmic load which he has taken during the fire sacrifice. And all the responsibilities of his marital problems, this problem, that problem. And the biggest responsibility of holding his soul in his hands and passing it on to his Gurudev and his Gurudev. Passing the soul back to Krishna. Taking responsibility, I will send the soul back to Godhead. There cannot be no responsibility which anybody in this world can take higher than that, some sort of a spiritual master. So the guru's life and soul is what? His disciples. A disciple's life and soul is his spiritual master. There is no meaning to a guru's life if he is not able to serve his devotees. He lives only to serve his devotees. That's all. And that is what we have to observe. When we say striking a relation with the guru, it is not just a physical relationship with his Vapu, but to observe closely, what is my Gurudev doing? What is he doing for the world? What is he doing for me? What is he doing for the mission? And that, when he sees with a very conscientious eye and a soft heart, that is what evokes love. That evokes love because he sees the intense sacrifice which the spiritual master makes for him and for the world. And that perception of sacrifice makes a disciple do something in reciprocation for the spiritual master. And the only thing the disciple thinks I can do now is give my life for him. I cannot do anything, but I just have to give my life. Because he has given his life, I have to give my life. So that's how we find that when this mood was there, and we have seen that in Prabhupada disciples, and many in our contemporary godbrothers also, that they were willing to give their life for the spiritual master. Many of them come and sit on this dais. And we are fortunate to see these people. People who have actually lived on the standard of Srimad Bhagavatam. Imagine telling a person, go in Pakistan and preach. It is sure death. That was the time when war was going on. He told Garga Muni Prabhu, you go and, somebody has challenged in the open Pandal program, Prabhupada. You are preaching in India and all this, Bombay and everything. Everyone knows about Krishna here. Why don't you send somebody to Pakistan if you think it's a worldwide movement? Yes, we'll send this person to Pakistan. You want us, you are challenging us? He just, Prabhupada just sent. Okay, send Garga Muni, Prabhu to Pakistan. Pakistan. Will any of us go to Pakistan and preach? So, you know, go to Mira Road. Yeah, it's nice to Mira Road. Maybe at the most, sometimes Virar. So, it's at long distance. I really had to travel around. Virar. Or somewhere Nerul. Of course, our devotees are wonderful. They travel to, you know, interior parts of Maharashtra, Goa. Some of them are now going to Russia, Ukraine. It's happening. Radhana Swami Maharaj is pushing people to take big strides like Hanuman. But yes, Prabhupada told them to go to Pakistan. Now, imagine the mood of the disciple, that he does not even think twice. Before the next telegram can tell them, don't go because there's a war has broken up, that disciple has already left. There's no money, there is nothing, he just goes out of the house. There's a telegram and then takes a bag and is out of the building. That's the way they were. This is not comprehensible. When you hear of this, this looks like legends. It looks like some fairy tales. How could devotees be like this? This is gone. Next thing you know is that he's already in Pakistan. And he's trying to preach there. He's being beaten there, spit, ridiculed. There are people with guns behind him walking. You cannot imagine such situation. You're just walking on the road. It's complete solitude, nobody next to you, everyone is in their house hiding, and the people walking behind you is people with guns, and they're still walking, you know, as if nothing is going on, he's just walking there, and then when they're not there anymore, he's trying to preach, try to do something, you know, get some disciples, do some kirtan. This is what a disciple does. When devotees saw Prabhupada giving his life, the only thing I could do is say, I have to give my life. Fearless. So, when we observe this in our founder Acharya and the people who are following him closely, then that observation of a disciple is most important. Because that will prevent in his life the big anartha of complacency. When he sees the spiritual master is going on and on and on and on and on without rest, without any sort of break whatsoever. In sickness, in health, whatever situation of life, in any sort of mood, whatever it may be, he just goes on. That when he sees, the disciple sees this, he also says, yes, I have to go on. So, this is called as Vani Seva. When he keeps hearing from his guru regularly, then his mood of always executing the orders of the guru, that is called as Vani Seva. And it is explained by Prabhupada's disciples and in some of these purports here, that Vani Seva is as good as seeing Krishna face to face. It's a beautiful concept. We see Krishna. Yes, we see Krishna here. But we don't have realization of his Archa Vigraha incarnation. But when do we really see Krishna? Krishna is right now very a hazy thing for us. Very hazy, very blurred concept. We are not able to see Krishna right now because of there's no Premanjana there. You only have this fleshy eyes which can't see Krishna, who is inconceivable to this physical vision. But then when you start serving the Guru through Vani Seva, then the personality who is now hidden behind the curtain of Yogamaya, he actually starts opening up that curtain for you. And when you start seeing Krishna, he becomes more of a tangible reality in our life. Krishna is there. And the more the disciple lives a life of selfless service to the Guru, the more that veneer of Maya becomes thinner and thinner and thinner. And in the stage of ultimate surrender to the spiritual master, he sees Krishna face to face. So when devotees were not able to see Prabhupada physically, they take shelter of his Vani. And in that Vani, they were actually able to perceive Prabhupada. They were seeing Prabhupada now again. They were seeing him. They were feeling his presence. When Radhana Swami Maharaj, Ladini Mataji, they went to Prabhupada's palace and Prabhupada left this world. Because they wanted to feel Prabhupada in their life again. They heard this terrible news. And they felt Prabhupada again in his Archa Vigraha. Like never before. They were seeing the Archa Vigraha for so many years. But now, they started seeing him in the Archa Vigraha. When the devotees took a small murti of Prabhupada through all the six temples of Sri Goswami temples, a small Vigraha of Prabhupada was there at Radhakund, which was placed in Bain Radhakund. The disciples became so much enamored by that murti, they could actually perceive Prabhupada in that Vigraha, which was at Radhakund. This is Prabhupada again with us. Prabhupada's presence was not a physical presence. He was now manifesting again in his Vani, in his Archa Vigraha, in his books, and he had manifesting through his disciples. Those empowered disciples who were willing to serve him, he was manifesting through them. So, just like Krishna empowers him to become manifest through his prasadam, through his Vigraha, through his Dham, the Guru also can become alive again. Through his disciples. Many of the people perceive the Guru in the Guru's disciples, in their godbrothers. Therefore, they take shelter of the senior disciples. When the Guru leaves, you know where he is. What do I do? Then they take shelter of that person who is most intimately connected with his Guru, and they take him as their Siksha Guru. Like Sridhar Swami Maharaj, for example. He was able to see Prabhupada's dedication in Giriraj Swami Maharaj. And he felt, I want to become like him. I want to follow in his footsteps. So, for so many years now, Sridhar Swami Maharaj, after Prabhupada has left this world, was worshipping Giriraj Maharaj like his guru also. He was seeing Prabhupada in the life of Giriraj Maharaj. And he is keeping him on his altar. We have seen that at Juhu. Because Prabhupada was so much manifesting through Giriraj Swami Maharaj, so it was very more easier for him to perceive him in that way, through a devoted disciple, than seeing him directly. So this is such a beautiful thing, that the Guru is never lost to the disciple. There is never a point of time when the Guru is lost. The Guru is always there. Therefore, Prabhupada says in the next purport here that however, the disciple and spiritual master are never separated. Clear. The Guru and disciple are never separated. Beautiful. Huh? Which disciple wants to get separated from his Guru? And which Guru wants to get separated from his disciple? No, no, but it doesn't, that disciple should not exist. Huh? We talk of in materialism like you know, marriage, which we say, okay, marriage means married till life. Huh? So everything in Krishna consciousness is like, you know, almost on a permanent basis. Huh? Of course, because of the material relationship of husband and wife, it ends at death. But because a spiritual master, disciple is far beyond and deeper than that, it sustains even beyond life. Even death cannot bring a break to the relationship. Therefore, we say, Janme Janme Prabhu Sahi. We say that every day. And we must spend some time in understanding what this really means. That as long as a disciple continues to take his vows seriously, and once keeps on serving his spiritual master, the relationship will never get severed. He will always feel his guru in his instructions. So Prabhupada was all alone in New York City, but he was not feeling the absence of his guru. His guru had left his body years ago, decades ago. And here was a place that was not even no other devotee through whom he could feel Prabhupada's, you know, his guru's empowered presence. He was just one devotee in maybe 10,000 miles. Nobody around him, not a single Vaishnava around. But even being all alone, with no association, still he was feeling strong presence of his guru in his life. How? Because he was seeing his guru through his vani. He was executing his guru's order to preach in the Paschat Desha, and that sacrifice he was making himself feel intimately connected with his spiritual master. So whether we're living, whether the spiritual master is in Bombay or Pune or Madras or in Russia, wherever he is, as long as disciples are cooperating to serve him, serve his instructions, they will always feel his presence. And even the disciple who is physically close but is disobedient will never feel intimacy in his heart with the spiritual master. So this particular mood of intimacy is a very important aspect of a devotee's life. Because that is what sustains, that is what fuels, the relation between the guru and the disciple is what fuels the disciple to continue Krishna consciousness. So, that has to be developed with great care, nurtured, when the opportunity is being given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Because that is the only wealth of the disciple. Hare Krishna. Any comments, questions? Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Granthashrimad Bhagavatam ki jai.